Thank you. It's been very interesting presentations where, as the last presentation was speaking of, the role of cooperation from a basically an intergovernmental organization. What I'm talking about now is from a non-governmental organization, but there are similar, let's say, benefits, challenges, pitfalls, as we call them. Let's start off with a, let me see now, I go down one, right. This little anecdote at the beginning I like to talk about was way back in 1957. I admit to being old enough to stand on the porch in those days, more than old enough, but we won't go into that. And I looked up at the sky, and we saw something going, flashing overhead, far up there, very visible, and what it was Sputnik, 1957. It was the beginning of space-based observations, which really totally changed the way we look at our planet, of seeing it from outer space. And as I started in my academic career and later, I started studying climate change and learned about the measurements of the greenhouse gases, CO2, and discovered that the first measurements started in 1957. A little bit later, I got into the ozone layer, all this stuff, and discovered that 1957, again, first measurements. So we asked, why? 57, Sputnik, first systematic carbon dioxide measurements, first systematic global stratospheric measurements. Well, why? To brag a bit, this was a role of the International Council for Science, working with some UN partners, brought together what was then the first international geophysical year, which mobilized the scientific community not to say that we think that 20 years from now climate change will be an issue, but let's look at fundamental understanding of our global system, taking advantage of the networking of scientists around the world who could bring together the capacity to measure carbon dioxide at Mauna Loa, in the Arctic, in the Antarctic, in Europe, in Asia, etc. And then also the ability to look up into the atmosphere and measure ozone. And quite frankly, and I had no involvement in this, but I'm told by people who are old enough to do so, that there was a challenge given out. You know, United States, can you put up a satellite for us to have measurements during the IGY? Well, they worked on it. Can the Soviet Union put up a satellite to measure things during the global international geophysical year? Well, they worked on it and they won. So in a sense, in a not overly necessarily great way, but international cooperation sometimes comes from international competition to see what we can deliver best. And so we had that. So the International Council for Science, as I say very quickly, we're a non-governmental organization. We work to strengthen international science for the benefit of society. So our objective is very much the objective of this session. The advantages we have roughly 120 members who are academies around the world. They represent about 140 countries, and we have 31 unions of scientists. The advantage is we have this global distribution, we have both organizations and we have individuals through members in scientific unions by discipline. The disadvantage sometimes is, quite frankly, some of our members have difficulty participating as well as we'd like them to. We want them to, but for financial or other reasons, one of the things we work on is the freedom and responsibility of science, the freedom of scientists to work around the world, to not be restricted by visas or international, let's say, discourse between countries. At the same time, that doesn't always work. We also, as I said, work on the integrity of scientists, as was being discussed in one of the sessions yesterday. So I'm going to move on quite quickly. So we do science for policy, universality of science, international research collaboration, and one of the things we've started really in the last few years, working with the Global Young Academy and others, is to try and enhance the early career scientists who will then participate across the activities on committees and science programs at meetings like this. So that's very important to us. So going back quickly, we had the International Geophysical Year in 1957, Sputnik was launched, that followed with other space-based observation capacity, which led to the creation of the Global Atmospheric Research Program back in 1967 with the partner of the World Meteorological Organization. In 1974, as a young scientist, I had the, well, it was the pleasure of being on a ship for 1 month off the coast of Africa. But we were working as one Canadian ship within a cadre of 40 ships from countries all over, well, mostly European and Western Hemisphere, very few Asian, because we were looking at the region between Africa and the Caribbean. But I'm told that that is the largest bringing together of ships by number for peaceful purposes in the world's history. There were Russian ships, British ships, German, French, I'm not sure all the Canadian. I know we had one. It took me a long time to convince the government to do that, but we did it. We got it there. We had to go through the Panama Canal because it came from the Pacific Ocean. But nonetheless, this was a real opportunity, and to be able to work together on a ship where you could actually, during the periods when we said, well, we'll stop observations for a day or so just to rest, we actually went over, stood next to the Russian ship, played volleyball on the back deck. They beat us miserably. I gave up. Anyway, I'm going to go into all that. To say that these kind of things are thing. Then they became the issue by 1980, and I'll come back to this issue often. As these issues become, let's say, important enough that the science community will be mobilized, and then often the governmental research supporting facilities will mobilize, climate change. Climate change is not a new issue. The objective of the Global Atmospheric Research Program was first to improve weather forecasting, but second, to understand climate change. It was in their mandate back in 1967, so this is not a new issue. Anyway, the International Geosphere Biosphere Program was started a few years later, biodiversity, and so on. The START program, Human Dimensions program. So we've been working together to try and bring together the global community of science across these disciplines, these issues of global environmental change in a very broad sense of the word, of bringing these things together. And just as an example, I happen to be the chair of the World Climate Research Program for that period of time. These programs become very, let's say, substantial. We did a little study in roughly 1990, I think. We asked a few people who knew how to do these number counting games to go through what it was it costing us to internationally coordinate this program, about $5 million. But what kind of science was being done, not in it, what kind of facilities of ships and spacecraft and aeroplanes, computing centers, but huge groups of scientists working together around the world. And the estimate in 1990 dollars was roughly $800 million per year. That's a pretty good return on investment. I wouldn't say any of that passed through our offices, but I knew when I was the chair of the World Climate Research Program, when I would go to Tokyo or somewhere else, I could meet with the head of the space agency and say, we need a satellite to do this, and we usually got it. Or we need a ship when we're talking in somewhere else in the world, or that kind of thing. Because of the persuasive power of scientists working together, we could mobilize resources. And we could and still continue to. Another issue that came out was by creating this science of World Climate Research Program, IGBP, among other many other factors, led to the governments saying, we got to have some kind of assessment process. And out of that came the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, which started in 1988 and continues to today. The Biodiversity Program started in 1991, and took a while, but eventually the Intergovernmental Platform on Biodiversity and Ecosystem Services, if I've got it right, IPBES we just call it, has been created, and it continues also. The START program was very much a recognition in 1992 that when we looked around the committees, the science projects we had within those three programs that are on that, is there was almost no participation from Africa. There was very little from Latin America. There was very little from smaller Asian countries. So the agreement, again, bringing together the science community, was, let's create a program which we called, for want of a better name, START, which was, the START program I'll show on a slide in a minute. Around the same time, 1990 was the second World Climate Conference. We all came through metal detectors at this meeting today, just for reasons. The first time I ever went through metal detectors to attend a scientific meeting was 1990 at the Second World Climate Conference plenary session, because the speakers included Margaret Thatcher, King Hussein of Jordan, the Prime Minister of Tuvalu, the President of Germany, and a few others. So we actually went into a position where there were actually prime ministers, heads of state speaking. But it also gave us an opportunity to say to these people, we need to know what the climate observing system, the climate is like. Can we create a global observing system? So in the end, out of it came, among other things, the Global Climate Observing System. And I'm a physicist, but I, for the last 15 years, I'm also appointed a professor of political science and geography. I've never had the benefit of a course in either topic, officially. But I've learned from my students, quite frankly, the idea of focusing events and agenda setting. What is the way in which, and I think as a science community, we need to understand this process better, as a natural science community. The political scientists do understand it, I think. But the idea of how an event such as a big meeting of heads of state talking about climate change focuses the issue in their minds, allows us as scientists to get involved to help set the agenda. So I'll come back to that later. The START program, very quickly, it promotes capacity building through research grants, regional networks, assessments, innovations in education, enhancing knowledge sharing through action, getting teams of scientists, young scientists, older scientists, working together in networks, but most importantly, connecting them with the broader community. And it's benefited by having, among others, Mohamed Hassan in the front row here as a member of its board. Mokotso Mekelle chairs it at the present time, and I won't go through all that. Just to say there's bringing together some good people help make it happen. Moving right along, International Polar Year, another example, again, of finding an issue that attracts science attention is really need of it, but integrating across allows one to motivate, again, big resources. Maybe $2 million a year to coordinate it, but our estimate was over $1 billion. Countries around the world contributed through observing systems, support of their scientists to work together. That's the principle, working together in a collective set of objectives, ways of doing things. And we have other projects, such as the one on disaster risk reduction. And while I'm on this, I just say that one of the challenges is bringing together the science communities across the issues of natural health, engineering, and social scientists. How do you get them to talk to one another? But one way is getting them to sit down around a committee table and basically challenge each other. What is the biggest issue? I'm a former weather forecaster guy, and we put out a weather forecast, and where a tornado is coming. And you expect people to run to the basement, get the kids, go to the basement. Instead, some of them run to the window with their movie camera, put the kids out front, and take pictures of the tornado coming up on them. Anyway, moving on, I'm getting the signal to move ahead. Future Earth is another example, and this is what you get when you ask an Australian to do a map of the world. If you don't recognize it, that is the world, but it's upside down from Canadian point of view, but that's the way we need to look at things, from different points of view. And the chair of this is our science committee. This is our engagement committee. So we're bringing together the science community and the stakeholders together as an opportunity, but also a huge challenge, getting them talking to one another to help design this program, but again, with a distribution of people in geography, disciplines, etc., and somewhat age. We're still working on that one. So Future Earth is underway. Again, a big challenge is how do we integrate across all these issues so we can feed into what are largely seen as somewhat independent UN processes, SDGs, disaster risk, and climate change. So, and I don't know whether Peter Gluckman's here or not, but we're working with the science policy advisors. But so just to say that there are practices and pitfalls at work, things we're learning about, We're learning how to better understand the importance of focusing events and how politicians and governments set their agendas. And with that, we're trying to work together to bring together these kind of programs that will address the big issues like that tidal wave of whatever it is coming at us on that side. And my grandkids sitting on Einstein's knee in front of the U.S. National Academy of Sciences, but literally, in a sense, building up on science, young people, to build research programs. So thank you.